Joining us in the KRVS studios this afternoon is Shane Gilbo, who along with Kyle Bork of SAS Productions are producing Tuna Does Vegas that will be at Cité des Arts. It will open on July 5th. And I know a lot of our listeners are familiar with Tuna. They know somehow there are famous plays with the name Tuna in it. Maybe they've even seen one. So let's talk about, before we talk about this one specifically, let's talk about that series of plays and kind of give them in chronological order how they got written.
Okay. Well, the first one was Great Tuna, which I did that one. And that's where we were first introduced to the characters of Tuna, Texas, the the third smallest town in Texas as it's built, and that met with much success. And then it was followed by a tuna Christmas, and then after that they did Red, White, and Tuna, and then this current one, Tuna Does Vegas.
Now, they've obviously been wildly successful. Where did they open? Were they Broadway plays originally?
From what I recall, the first one was actually Circle in the Square in New York. It started out as a workshop and
just took off.
It worked.
Like every community theater in the country performs these plays.
Yes.
Well, what is it about them that you particularly like when you first start, you know, were in your first tuna play? What was it about the acting and the characters that you liked?
Well, the interesting thing is the characters themselves are, it's people we know. And it can be Texas, Louisiana, wherever. We just know the characters. And the second thing that really attracts me to it is basically it's a two-man show, and two actors portray 22 to 23 different characters.
In every play, this is how it...
Pretty much, yeah. And so the costume changes are lightning fast. And we portray the characters several times during the play, so in Tuna Christmas, I want to say there were 72 costume changes in terms of, and the quickest one being about a 30-second break before you had to be back on as someone completely different.
Well, what are the stories like with so many character changes? How do you keep a cohesive story going on? Are they little vignettes that take place?
Well, it's little vignettes, but I mean, it actually flows as a solid, as a fluid play. I mean, mm-hmm. because you can cast it with the two actors, or they suggest you can also multicast,
okay.
which, the lines are funny no mm-hmm. matter what. Mm-hmm. But I think what makes it so interesting and what makes the audiences keep coming back is the fact that it's two people.
Mm-hmm.
And, and we've heard comments that, one of the characters, Bertha, the audiences always connect to her and they go, she's like a real person. Like, we expect to see her walk out from backstage and so that's a compliment to the actor playing her, which is Kyle Bork.
So you can just do two or expand if you like and add other characters, but there's something astonishing and exhilarating, I'm sure, watching two people perform all of these different characters.
Absolutely. And we play anywhere from men, women, children, functional, dysfunctional. So it's like I said, we all know these people.
Well, describe some of those characters from that first play, Greater Tuna, that you particularly enjoyed playing.
I think for myself, one of the ones I play is Vera Karp. And she's just the small town rich woman who has opinions about everything. She belongs to the Smut Snatchers Club, and her goal is to get away with anything sinful or, just full of smut. And it's how she goes about it. She's holier than thou, but not wanting – but she doesn't see that she comes across that way. So, and the things she says are just sort of ridiculous sometimes.
And so you use a full costume, like wigs and dresses, and you change costume completely.
Absolutely. And again, that's what makes it so amazing. For us as actors, I think we astonish ourselves sometimes when we realize, we do that night after night so quickly. Our costume changes are wonderful.
Mm-hmm. And so describe a few more characters from Tuna, Texas.
Well, there's Bertha. She's the mother of the salt
Salt of the earth.
Salt of the earth mother just would do anything for her children. She's known as an enabler to comedic effect, though. There's Arliss Struve, who is the radio disc jockey. He's the successful one in town. His radio program, he has 70 listeners on a daily basis.
How many people live in Tuna?
I would say probably about 300.
Okay.
Yeah. But 70 is – he holds the record.
Yeah.
Who else? Petey Fiss, the Animal Humane Society representative. There's Charlene, who just – you just have to see her to get it.
And you've played her before?
I have. Mm-hmm. I have. She has aspirations of being a big star one day. Yeah. Who else? Oh, Aunt Pearl. Yeah.
Yeah, lots of different characters.
Just tons of them.
Representing this town. So what kind of a storyline is there in that first one, Greater Tuna? What happens? What's the plot in that one?
In that one, the local judge passes away. And so it sort of centers around that and the mysterious circumstances. And really, the plot is – it's not so much about the plot. It's about
the people.
The people that come on and represent
mm-hmm.
that town.
Mm-hmm.
Tuna Vegas is – I'm assuming the last in the series, but without giving anything away, Arliss and Bertha have flirted through various productions, you know. Well, they're married now, and so they're going. The whole reason to go to Vegas is they're renewing their wedding vows, and it's the chaos and mayhem that follows.
So they've already gotten married in another production or off stage somewhere.
Well, at the end of Tuna Christmas, you sort of see that happening,
mm-hmm.
So they've been married, and it's time to renew in Vegas.
Okay, so are there any added characters in Tuna Goes to Vegas, Tuna Does Vegas?
There are. The audiences will see two, not one, but two Elvis Presley impersonators. One of them will probably be the tallest Elvis impersonator ever. There's the acupuncturist. Her name is Woohoo. And a former Las Vegas showgirl who is now a hotel proprietress. Her name is Anaconda.
And which of these do you play?
I play Anaconda, mm-hmm. and I also play Woohoo, mm-hmm. the Asian little. She's an Asian acupuncturist, and she's quite funny. And some of the other.
And one of the Elvis impersonators, maybe.
I'm assuming that I would be an Elvis impersonator that does not get employed very much.
Okay.
Yeah. That's all I'm going to say about
okay,
that.
Okay, you don't have to give that all away. So what is the structure of these Tuna plays? How many acts are?
They're all basically two acts. Mm-hmm. This is a two-act play. And in this one in particular, the act one is the setup of everybody, how they all end up in Vegas. And then act two is the Vegas experience. And I find that this ties up their lives nicely. Like at the end of this, things are going to be okay in Tuna, Texas.
No need for another play. So it's going to leave us with a really good feeling. So you've been in Greater Tuna and A Tuna Christmas, but we haven't done Red, White, and Tuna here in Lafayette yet?
Correct. Mm-hmm. If I'm not mistaken, the original guys actually came to the Hyman Center. It's been a while, but myself. So that might be another venue I may be looking at in doing in the future to say I did all of the plays.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're a theater teacher as well, I believe.
Correct.
During the year. Teach at Lafayette High. Do you find that acting in these plays helps you in your own teaching throughout the year? Because you're quite busy during the summers. You're very involved in acting on a number of levels. Does it help you in your teaching?
It does. I think the main thing it does for me is it reinvigorates me, and I can go back into the classroom totally revived. Because the school year can be long, and mm-hmm. we have a very successful competition program at Lafayette High, and so that takes a lot of energy through the year, and the kids get to experience it at theater and competition. I'm sort of in the back stage area, so to speak.
Being the responsible one and yes. thinking of all the details.
Yes, we do have to grow up and take responsibility. So,
but then during the summer, you get to just enjoy acting again.
Yes, I get to relive my youth.
Well, what other kinds of acting are you involved with?
Well, I've been doing the, you know, auditioning out of, you know, New Orleans has quite a bit. Louisiana has a lot. So I've been doing that for many years.
In and film, you're talking
in
about.
In film and commercials. And, you know, I just recently was lucky and landed a role. And I actually filmed that yesterday in Hammond. I experienced I now know what Hammond looks like, the back roads of Hammond. So and you know, so that too during the summer when things like that come up,
It
inspires me and it shows me why I do what I do.
Mm-hmm. Well, does acting in films how different is that than being on the stage? What skills do you have to use there?
It's quite different. It's basically whatever you do on stage, you have to not do on film. And facial expressions. I think the biggest thing for me was that there's no audience response. Mm. You know, you're filming something and you have – I mean in theater with the Tuna series, when you do something that they like it, I mean there's instant – you know that worked. The film, you know, we do take after take after take and they, you know, they're telling you, good job, that was great, you know, and – but you're not quite sure what it is you're doing. And they're like, keep doing what you're doing.
Okay. And you're, yeah.
You know?
It's like dancing without music or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, absolutely.
So. Well, do you find that it causes you to, I guess, reach further into your theatrical resources in order to maintain that sense of acting where you're not getting it from the audience? It has to be from yourself?
Right. I mean, with theater, you do have to have, you know, there's concentration, absolutely. But I think with film, it's there's even more so. Mm-hmm. And with the film acting comes from more from within, and it's more of a subtle thing that has to mm-hmm. happen.
Well, tell us what the movie was that you're.
Well, the production name is Proof of the Devil, and I play the father in the movie. And my son is basically possessed, and I'm trying to be the good father and you know take care of that problem. And he just didn't want anything to do with that. So I meet my demise very quickly in the movie.
That's very dramatic.
Yes, but you know, to give up your life for your child, I guess is love, I guess. I'm not sure.
Well, so how does that – I mean, that sounds very dramatic and like it would be very scary when you see it in a movie. What is the scene actually like when you're acting in it, when you're taking the take?
Well, the interesting thing was this – the movie is being filmed documentary style. So that's the first time in terms of any film work that I've done that it was that type. So it was actually a relief and it took a lot of pressure off because – the cameras were everywhere and you didn't have to worry about, okay, am I walking out of camera view? Am I getting too close to the camera? So it was actually liberating and quite enjoyable. And I was shocked at how fast, how much quicker that type of production moves. Mm-hmm. We filmed the scene. Usually a scene like that in the past would take 7 or 8 hours, just that, you know, that scene. And we literally, once we started filming and did several takes, we about an hour and a half, and we were done. But at the same time, the energy for that particular scene, we were supposed to be sweating in the scene. Well, it happened.
It was hot.
It was
enough.
Real. When you see the sweat, it was real.
Now, are they using local buildings to film in, or is this all set production?
This actually, there was a home. We filmed inside of a home. In Hammond, they acquired it as a set location and went in there and did what we had to do.
Wow. Well, we look forward to that film coming out. Perhaps it'll make its way over to Lafayette. If you are just tuning in, my guest is Shane Gilbo. He's an actor. He's also a teacher of theater at Lafayette High. He and Kyle Bork of SAS Productions are putting on Tuna Does Vegas. It is the fourth in a series of tuna plays. As he said, the first one sets up all the characters in the small town of Tuna, and we learn more about their lives in the subsequent plays. And Tuna Does Vegas, obviously, as the name says, shows up many characters from Tuna going to Vegas, and then you get introduced to some new characters as well. And the two of you are directing as you're acting in that. How's that working?
Well, that's what when we did Tuna Christmas last November, we did that, and We just sort of know each other's style, and I may suggest this will work, and then or Kyle will, and we just sort of it's a melange of director styles, and it just works.
Hmm. Has it ever inspired you to write a similar play or create a similar play set in South Louisiana?
Oh, I have thought about it and think it would be just hysterical, but me writing. I wouldn't even know where to begin.
I'd like to be on the stage saying.
Give me the lines. I'll say them. Great. I'll act them out. But to create – that's why I don't know where these men that wrote this – I don't know where they come up with this stuff. Mm.
Well, maybe your acting it here will inspire some playwrights around here to create something as well.
Hopefully.
How do people get tickets for Tuna Does Vegas?
Well, there's actually two ways. You can do reservations, and that you can do by simply calling CTA, and I will give the number. It's 291-1122. Again, 291-1122. And also online through CTA, if you go to their website, it's ctadesar.org. You can do PayPal. And we're just – the success of the last play, we are highly – you know, would like to recommend that people go in through PayPal and actually acquire the tickets for the night they would like.
Okay, to reserve it now. And you do run over three weekends?
Yes. Mm-hmm. We open July 5th and we go through the 28th. So we're doing three weekends. That would be the first and second weekend, and then the fourth weekend. We sort of skip a weekend and – come back and finish it up. Showtimes are at 7:30, and we will be doing two Sunday matinee shows, which we have not done in the past, but they seem to respond well to those. So we're going to add some Sunday matinees.
So if you prefer a matinee, it would be a good idea to reserve your seat for those matinees.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. All right.
And if I can mention, yes. The ticket price is $15, and it's just general seating.
Okay. So either call or go to their website and reserve your tickets now. If you just tuned in, my guest, Shane Gilbo, is a part of the duo putting on Tuna Does Vegas, a comedy by Jastin Williams, Joe Sears, and Ed Howard. Kyle Bork and Shane Gilbo are acting in the play and directing it as well. And a great opportunity to see this very, very popular play, again, produced all over the United States, and just really does touch a lot of people, as you were saying, Shane. You just recognize characters from our own community as well. That's SAS Productions, and I know that production company has put on some very popular plays around here as well, and maybe just mention a couple plays you've done.
I think probably some of the audience will recognize Gorobec and Eulalie. Mm-hmm, people just refer to them now as the Cajun plays, and those have been very successful and a joy to put on stage.
And you all reprise that periodically as well.
We do.
Well, we can look forward to that. But now you can see SAS Productions putting on Tuna Does Vegas at CITE, opening on July 5th and running for three weekends. You can find more of the schedule at the CITE Des Arts website. Well, thank you so much for doing this in your summer times that most people would think of as vacation time, but you think of as this perfect opportunity to act and just get involved in this wonderful theatrical community that we have. Thank you so much, Shane.
Thank you so much.